This is the Post-Gazette Roundtable on Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan.
Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable. I'm your host, Post-Gazette Sports Editor Jerry Micco, and I'm joined in studio today by the PG's Ray Fittipaldo, 93.7, The Fan morning show host Greg Giannotti. Guys, on this week's show, we're going to take a look at the Super Bowl matchup between the Steelers and Packers, as well as a quick look at the Penguins and Pitt basketball. Ray, we'll get right to it. Talk about the Super Bowl. Statistically, these are two of the best defenses in the NFL, 1-2. In a lot of categories and overall, certainly. But, you know, is this one where something has to give? I'm taken back to last year in the 37-36 game, but I know the teams are much different now. But is this going to be one of those low-scoring games? Is this going to be a 16-13? Are you looking for a game where the offenses really do get going once they kind of get the butterflies out of the way and kind of like a heavyweight fight, they kind of, you know, punch on each other a little bit for a couple rounds? Is this the kind of game where you're just looking for just a real heavy defensive battle, or the defense is going to get cut up a little bit?
No, I think just the way the rules are set up now for the NFL, you know, the way the kickoffs are, you know, teams are going to be getting the ball on the 30-40-yard line. I don't think this is going to be a Steelers-Ravens type of score where you know that game's always going to be in the teens or maybe even the single digits. You know, I think both teams are going to get to the 20s, and I think this is going to be one of those games where you have to look at who's going to do the best in the red zone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be on the back of Aaron Rodgers of the Packers and Ben Roethlisberger of the Steelers. You know, whichever team can punch it into the end zone when they have the opportunities. I think that's going to be the team that's going to be in the best shape to win this game in the end.
I know it's a lame way to look at things, but I could really see this game going either way. One thing that I would say as far as a low-scoring game, that Steelers offense may struggle a ton without Marquise Pouncey. Looks like he's not going to play in this football game. We saw that offense kind of clam up in the second half against the Jets. I don't know how much Doug Legursky playing center had to do with that. And also, can the Packers run the ball? Will they run the ball effectively? I don't think that they can with James Starks and against that Steeler run defense. So the real question in this football game is, can the Green Bay Packers turn into that one-dimensional offense throwing the football effectively on the Pittsburgh Steelers? Not a lot of teams can do that as far as personnel goes. The New England Patriots can. Can Aaron Rodgers, first time in a Super Bowl in a big spot with those great wide receivers, turn into that offense that all they do is throw the football around the yard? And it's going to be tough for the Steelers to defend that, especially with all the weapons. I mean, you go all the way down to a guy like Jordy Nelson, fourth wide receiver. There's three guys better than him. So if it's going to be a high-scoring game, it's because the Packers are just running on all cylinders through the air.
You know, one of the things that you look at, you're talking about the offense getting started for the Packers. For Rodgers, and he's a really good quarterback. Aaron Rodgers is a good quarterback. Reminds me of Roethlisberger in some ways. Good with his feet. Doesn't have Roethlisberger's creativity. But certainly, you know, he's proven he can win big games already, but it's the Super Bowl, and I think you're going to see that. Maybe you're going to see some butterflies early. If the Steelers, I think, will have a chance and want to get on these guys, they're going to have to do it early. And I think because Rodgers eventually is going to figure it out, Ray. I mean, he's going to, you know, he's going to score. I look for it to be a game in the 20s and maybe even the low 30s. I just think that they're going to score some, and I think both teams are going to go at it pretty good.
Well, Greg, you mentioned, you know, the Packers being able to throw the ball around the yard. If you look back on Super Bowl 40, Hasselbeck and the other Seattle receiver, they were having great success in the passing game early on in that game. Then they sort of got away from it. They, mm-hmm. you know, they missed some field goals, and so the Steelers defense can be had. You know, even if you look at Seattle Seahawks, they were a very good team that year. But I don't know if I would put them in the class of the Packers when it comes to throwing the ball. So, yeah, I do think the Steelers can be thrown on, even though Paul Mahler's back in the lineup. I know he was not in the lineup last year when they had that shootout at Heinz Field. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I do think the Steelers can be thrown on, and I think it might be up to Roethlisberger to win this game in the second half, because I do think it's going to be a game, you know, where it's going to be up in the 20s or maybe even low 30s if the Steelers get scored upon mm-hmm. early.
Now, Jerry, you say that Aaron Rodgers has to figure it out at some point. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. He's been very good here, but it's not like he's gotten to that point where you know what you're going to get out of him in a spot like the Super Bowl. Hey, he's not Drew Brees. He's not Peyton Manning. He's not Tom Brady quite yet. Has he had a phenomenal run here? Did he have one of the best postseason games I've seen a quarterback have in a long time at Atlanta? Yes, but I wouldn't be surprised if he clammed up in this game and didn't play all that well. It's not like every single game he's played this year is 350 yards through the air. I remember a game where they beat the Jets 9-0. He wasn't very successful against the Bears both times this year, three times this year, week 17 most notably, and it wasn't carving up that Bears defense in the NFC Championship game either. So I can't see him just assuming or penciling him in for a phenomenal football game. I wouldn't be surprised if he threw a couple of picks and maybe the stage is a little too big for him. I don't think he's gotten to that point in his career yet.
I thought he looked great in the first half of that Bears game. And then he got knocked around a little bit, and then, you know, he wasn't the same in the second half. But, you know, they opened up that game. They went boop, boop, boop right down the field, and, you know, they were having that way with that defense early. So if they're capable of coming out and, you know, putting some points on the board early in this game too, I think.
Well, I understand the stage is much bigger. It's the Super Bowl. And you know, I think when you look back all the way back to Seattle when the Steelers played them in Detroit, Ben didn't have a good game. He had a lousy game, actually. And it looked like he was maybe not as big for that. That maybe that's a comparison, Greg, that I would use. Maybe if you want to look at it that way, yes, Ben just didn't have a good day, but a lot of guys around him did. And, Aaron Rodgers, I think he has to have a good day for Green Bay to have any type of success.
Oh, absolutely. And Aaron Rodgers is a little further along in his career than Ben was at the time. So you have to factor that in. But yeah, you can't – I don't think you can understand. Everybody just assumes that you toss out all the other stuff and you just focus on what can happen on the field, matchups and this wide receiver and this corner and zone this and whatever. But there is a lot to be said about a guy who's never played in that spot in a Super Bowl. You don't know how he's going to be affected by that whatsoever. So there's, 16 guys on the Steelers going for their third one. Now, there's some injured reserve guys in there, so that number's a little bit inflated. But you can't tell me experience isn't in the Steelers' corner in this one. I think that plays a huge part in this football game.
Well, really, if you look at the two quarterbacks, and a lot will be made of the two quarterbacks because some people see some similarities there between them. They're two elite quarterbacks, certainly. Where would you rank Rodgers, say, in comparison to Ben? If you say Ben is a top three quarterback in the NFL, is Rodgers in the top six, top five, top 10? I mean, Ray, I don't know. I mean, where would you put him? I mean, you would put Roethlisberger, I would think. Most people would in the top three.
Yeah, I would go Brady, Manning, Roethlisberger, and then, you have Drew Brees thrown in there too, but the way Aaron Rodgers has played this year and the way he's playing in the postseason, I would certainly put him in the top five or top seven right now.
Am I drafting a fantasy football team or am I trying to win a Super Bowl is the question. And Aaron Rodgers, I might change my tune on that if he wins this one. But right now it's got to be Ben Roethlisberger. He wins games. Is it pretty all the time? No, but this team would be nowhere near the Super Bowl. And I don't want to hear people giving me, well, they were 3-1 without him. But they would be nowhere near this game without Ben Roethlisberger, especially with the offensive line the way it's been. He's going to miss another piece here in Marquise Pouncey, the most important one. Ben's got to be right in that discussion, and if he gets a third one, then nobody can deny him that right with amongst his peers, Brady, Manning, and himself. I hope he gets that Super Bowl just for that discussion. Still, he's even said it himself. He said a Championship Wednesday before the Jet game. Now he's never going to win, a passing title. Mm-hmm. He's never going to be that aesthetically pleasing quarterback that some of these other guys are. But I only care about winning. I don't care about winning fantasy leagues. I don't care about saying, wow, look at that throw. That was so pretty. Look at this guy. I don't care about any of that. 366 yards doesn't mean anything to me. You got a couple of Lombardi trophies. You get a third one. That's what's important in the game of football.
Well, that puts him with guys like Troy Aikman, and who not all the time was the prettiest quarterback and got everything done just right, but he always managed to get the job done. I talk about the offensive line because you guys have mentioned it a couple times. Certainly without Pouncey, and this is already a makeshift line. It gets more makeshift with Doug Ligursky playing center, but the Steelers have run the ball pretty well. At least they did against the Jets. Are they going to be able to do that with Ligursky? They're going to have to do it. And only a guy like Ben, quite frankly, getting back to the quarterbacks just for a second, can work behind that kind of an offensive line and really do something.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't the Steelers go down the field on all running plays after Pouncey was injured?
They did.
In that first quarter, that second quarter. They were able to put together drives with Ligursky in the game in that first half. They did bog down in the second half. That wasn't a promising, that wasn't a promising set of developments the way that second half unfolded. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just the way the game went. But, Ligursky's no slouch. He's been in the league for a while now. I think they'll be okay without him. But, Marquise Pouncey made the Pro Bowl in his first season. He's a great player now. He's going to be a great player for a long time. And, if we sat here and said it wasn't going to make a difference, we'd be wrong. It's going to make a difference, but I do think they'll be okay with Legerski in that game.
Oh, it is a huge deal. You can't say that it's not a huge deal because everybody said, look at this offensive line. What would you do without Maurkice Pouncey? Think about if Pouncey wasn't here to anchor this offensive line, everybody going down around him. Well, he went down. What made me feel a little bit better is apparently Legerski is very good at recognizing defenses, making those calls. That football acumen is at a level where it needs to be at that center position. But it's a huge deal. And by the way, no B.J. Raji on the New York Jets. They have Sione Puha playing that nose tackle position, who's in there for Chris Jenkins, who's always out for the year. So that's a factor. And I think that people don't know B.J. Raji like they might know someone like Haloti Ngata. If Pouncey wasn't playing against the Ravens and that Ngata-Legerski matchup was happening, there'd be Steeler fans that are, you know, sweating bullets. But since they don't know Raji so much and they're in the Super Bowl and they're riding high, I think that kind of gets put on the back burner a little bit. Will it sink them? I don't think so. But to downplay it, I think, is a faulty logic.
Maybe Dom Capers will do the Steelers a favor and drop Raji back into pass coverage a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Like after the Bears game. Yeah. He's Casey Hampton-like. I mean, it's amazing. Like, talk about guys who kind of look alike on the team, or at least have the body shape, Raji and Hampton. I want to still touch the offensive line real quick. You look at that line. You look at Jonathan Scott. You look at Chris Kimoiatu. Now Doug Legerski, Ramon Foster, Flozell Adams. This is a Super Bowl offensive line. This is much like Super Bowl 40, very much like it, where they just kind of patchwork together. And that, I don't know if it's a tribute to Roethlisberger or the defense or the coaching staff or what, but I didn't think a line like that could get him to the Super Bowl.
Well, Super Bowl 43, I think you mean. That was the one Darnell Stapleton. Right. And
yeah, but think about that offensive line. You had Max Starks and Willie Colon on that line, and people are saying that line stunk, and those guys aren't playing. You'd love to have those guys back. This line is much, much worse. Mm-hmm. The Steelers don't have to have success with an offensive line because they have a great defense, a great quarterback. So you can get away with that stuff a little bit. But boy, this is – I mean, they're not good, and they're even worse now.
To the Post-Gazette Roundtable on Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Jerry Micco, and I'm with the PG's Ray Fittipaldo and 93.7 The Fan morning show host Greg Giannotti. Greg, I want to start this segment with you. When you look at a team like the Steelers, 8th Super Bowl, going for their 7th Super Bowl, the 7th Lombardi, you know, where do you think this team ranks among all the great Steeler all-time teams, considering some of the, you know, off-field stuff that they had to go through with Ben missing 4 games and then the injuries? Where do you, when you think of great Steeler teams, where do you put these guys?
Well, it's tough to say. It's comparing apples and oranges with the 70s teams and these teams. To me, they're not as good as that 2008 team, even if they win this football game. The way I'm going to look at this is it would be another dynasty. And now, of course, it's spread out a little bit, 2005, 2008, and then 2010. But to me, it would be the second of 2 dynasties that the Steelers had. You had Super Bowl 9, 10, 13, 14 in the 70s, and then this one. So I would look at it more, which dynasty would be better, the 70s one or this one? Because if you get 3, even though you got 4 in the 70s, you get 3 here, salary cap era, everything that goes on in the NFL, I'm sorry to everybody that wouldn't think so. That's a dynasty, especially when you have, 16-some-odd players going for their third one. So to me, I would still lean towards those teams of the 70s, just because of all the Hall of Famers. Not that you're going to not have a bunch here, but I can't look at defenses with Joe Green, who to me is the greatest defensive player of all time, Lambert, Ham, Blunt, you go on and on and on the defense there. And of course, the offense, you don't even need to go into all that. Harris, Bradshaw, Swan, Stallworth, those teams, those are the greatest teams in football history, some of them. So, and it's just, there's something nostalgic about that. There's something where you can't touch those teams. It's sort of like in baseball when you think about it, there might be a better team, but you always look back to a 27 Yankees or teams like that where there's something special, even though I wasn't alive to see them. Maybe that's why I think that, because all I see is NFL films and the music behind it and this and that and the special nature of it. So it would be a dynasty unto itself with these three, but I still have to put those Steeler teams ahead of them in the 70s.
Well, let's just compare these recent teams, this team to the 2005 team and the 2008 team. I agree with you. I think the 2008 team had a better defense. But don't you think this team might have a little bit better, more juice on offense when you consider that Rashard Mendenhall is the running back on this team? And I know Santonio was there the last time, but you have Mike Wallace as a deep threat. I think you have more well-rounded receivers when you throw Sanders and Antonio Brown into the mix, even though they've come on late in the season. I think there's a chance that this offense might be better than that 2018.
We'll see. I mean, you have to remember, Santonio Holmes are the biggest catch in the biggest spot there, and will they be able to do that again, some of these younger guys who have been great? We could be sitting here the Monday after the Super Bowl saying, well, these guys weren't ready for prime time. Leading up to the game, they were great, but when it counted, they weren't. Younger Hines Ward in that 2008 game. Maybe a little more juice. I don't know. Well-rounded, I would go with. But the offensive line we just talked about in the last segment, certainly better in 2008. And who thought we'd be sitting here a couple of years later with the Steelers back in the Super Bowl saying that that 2008 offensive line was better than the one they had now? So, I would agree with you, well-rounded. I don't know about more juice because Santonio, I mean, that catch, that throw by Ben, it's not going to get any better than that, I don't think.
I think the defense is better on this team than on the 08.
Really?
Do you? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think Timmons makes them better. I think Woodley is playing so well, and I know he's a couple years older. Harrison Harrison was Harrison, but he's still playing great. I think Ziggy Hood has played really well and come along. Palomalu. Ike Taylor has played well. I think, and this is probably blasphemy in here in Pittsburgh to even say this, but I think that McFadden and Gay have done a nice job on the other side. Not great, but they've done what they could do over there and done a nice job, and I think Ryan Clark has played better and added more maybe this year than he did in 08, although nobody will ever forget the hit on the running back,
McGahee.
Right. Everybody thought he was dead when he got hit. But I actually think the defense is a little bit better. I mean, do you guys see – I mean, Greg, you don't. You think the defense, I guess, on the 08 team is a little better.
That team was dominant defensively. Mm-hmm. James Harrison, defensive player of the year that year, he was all over the place. And not to say that he wasn't this year. And I think that this year he doesn't get as much credit as he deserves because James Harrison's story in 2010 was that of the fines and that he's going to retire because of this, because of that. That 08 team, very good. And I just, I don't know. I think that it's a lot of the same guys. And any time that these guys are a little bit older, especially when they're in their 30s now, it's not like they were rookies and then they've gotten better. They're always going to take a step back. But it's very comparable. It's tough because they're both very good. But I think 08, that was dominant. These guys are just very good.
Mm. You have to wonder, when is it going to come to an end? Back in the 70s, it abruptly came to an end when they – didn't make the playoffs in 1980. I think it's 6 or 7 defensive starters are over the age of 30 here.
Yes.
You know, they're coming to a point where, I know they're replenishing with guys like Ziggy Hood, but they're coming to a point where it's going to be their last stand. And, you know, hopefully it's not for the Steelers' sake, but, I wouldn't be surprised if it was.
Well, one thing we can also talk about when you talk about the Steelers and their success over the years, the coach is Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and now Mike Tomlin, and you fit Mike Tomlin into that mix. This is the second Super Bowl in 4 years. He's going for a second Lombardi. You know, he's beaten two really good teams in the playoffs. Is he Coach of the Year? Is he going to get a lot of votes, or is this going to be the Steelers should win every year, and so what?
I don't think he's going to get a lot of votes. You got to remember, it's also regular season stuff. They're not going to talk about the postseason or factor that in. It's always the Steelers are always going to get the short end of the stick one way or another, whether it be in the Hall of Fame now because there's too many Hall of Famers in there that are Steelers, whether it be something like Coach of the Year because of the organization. They're not going to look at what Mike Tomlin did, but he should be in that mix, of course, with the Ben suspension, all the injuries on the offensive line, the distraction with the league. To me, you know, a guy like even Raheem Morris, I thought really deserved it. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and that's Tomlin's buddy, just because that team was brutal last year. Just awful, the Bucs, and they played in probably the toughest division in the NFC. To me, it's not so much Tomlin Coach of the Year. What interests me more is Mike Tomlin's his elevated status on the Steeler coaches of all time. He automatically, if he wins this game, becomes the second best coach in Steeler history, in my opinion. He jumps ahead of Bill Cowher with that second championship. So that interests me more. That Coach of the Year award, I think Mike Tomlin would agree, is when he hoists that sticky Lombardi, as he calls it, more than a Coach of the Year hardware.
Yeah, and I think Mike McCarthy from the Packers is going to have a great opportunity to win that award too because he's probably overcome more injuries.
Yeah, 15 guys on IR. It's just incredible.
He did a great job just as Tomlin did with the Steelers this year, overcoming adversity. But getting back to Tomlin, when he first came here, he had some problems initially when he was riding those guys a little bit too hard. They thought, I know Hines Ward spoke up, and Once he got his relationships settled with the key guys on this team, the core guys, it's been a really good run for him here. And as Greg said, if he gets the second Lombardi Trophy, he's going to be up there with the all-time greats with the Steelers.
Yeah, so he'll have one more than Cowher. I mean, he'll have one more Lombardi than Cowher, who is considered one of the you know, one of the two great coaches in this team's history. I'm going to ask a quick open-ended question to both you. And, Greg, I'll start with you. The Steelers win next Sunday because what do they do? What are they going to have to do to win?
They're going to have that offense move the football consistently for four quarters. That's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about the Packers' defense really clamping down, getting Ben out of the rhythm, making sure that Rashard Mendenhall doesn't get near 100 yards. I think putting together a full effort, because we've seen a couple of halves now in both these games in the playoffs, the Steelers need to consistently move the football, consistently score points. Don't settle for field goals. I'm not so worried about Aaron Rodgers personally. I think that he's getting so incredibly overhyped here. Not that he's not good. I just don't see him stepping into this game and throwing five touchdown passes against the Steelers. I think the defense is going to be fine. What I'm worried about is if it is that low-scoring game, can that offense do what it can do when they're fully healthy and when Ben's playing at the top of his game? So four quarters of good offensive football will win the Steelers this game.
The Steelers win if they jump on the Packers early and put some doubt into those young minds over there who will be playing in their first Super Bowl. I love the way the Steelers came out and jumped on the Ravens early. I think if they do that again, the Packers aren't going to fold like the Jets did in the first half of that game, but I think it will create some doubt, and I think the Steelers will have a big edge if they can get out and score some touchdowns early in the first half.
I'm going to touch on one other topic that is not an on-field topic but an off-field topic, and that's the labor issues the NFL is going to face. Is this going to be – I mean, this could be the last game for a year. Could be. It's they're going to have press conferences down there. The NFLPA is on Thursday. Roger Goodell will talk on Friday. Do you see that getting resolved anytime soon, or is that something where it's going to be protracted and maybe even go into a training camp?
No, I don't know. I don't know where the stage that they're at right now with these negotiations. I know it doesn't look good. I know there's an issue there that DirecTV, with the contract with the league, was basically going to fund the lockout and give millions of dollars to these teams even if they didn't play. Now, the Players Association heard about this. They want to go after that, so it gives a little more sense of urgency from the owner's side to resolve things. One thing I don't want to do is hear about it anymore from the NFL until the Super Bowl is played. I feel like Roger Goodell is always talking about it. He sends out an email to the fans about it. He's talking about how he's only going to be working for a dollar if there is a lockout. Hey, Raj, pipe down for a second. Let's enjoy this Super Bowl. You got two of your most storied franchises in the game. Then we'll deal with it. But I don't know if it's going to get resolved. It scares the heck out of me. I can't imagine. I was too young to remember 82 work stoppage then. I can't imagine the world without NFL football come September. So I hope it gets resolved.
It's not a fun world. Trust me. Go ahead.
I worry about the players. I don't remember if it was 82 or 87, but high profiles got guys like Mike Webster cross the line, and if you get one or two guys who do that, I do think you'll see others follow. I hope they can stay together this time. I hope they have more solidarity than they've shown in the past. This is going to be a huge test for them because I do think they will be locked out. I do think the owners are going to make a stand here, and I think it's going to be up to the players to hopefully they saved enough money and hopefully they could stick together and show the league that they're not going to back down this time.
I don't know if we remember all the other lockouts or walkouts. The fans are the ones who lose. Okay, up next we talk about the Penguins and Pitt Hoops. This is the Post-Gazette Roundtable on 93.7 The Fan.
Back to the Post-Gazette Roundtable on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Jerry Micco, and I'm with PG's Ray Fittipaldo and Fan Morning Show host Greg Giannotti. Ray, a little talk about Pitt hoops here to start this segment off. They had that we talked about last week on the roundtable that, again, it came against Notre Dame at the Pete. So is there anything from that game you look at long-term and say, this is not going to work, or is this just one of those blips on the radar that you're going to get in Big East basketball because of the competition?
Yeah, not unless they have to play Notre Dame in the Big East tournament, which I guess could happen again because it happened last year. But there are not any other teams in the Big East who are going to try to employ that type of style. Notre Dame is perfect for that. They have shooters they could space the floor with. They have a great point guard in Ben Hansborough who could take the ball in his hands and decide whether he's going to dish or whether he's going to take a shot. To me, I don't think they have to worry about that type of game. They do have to worry about letdowns because it's a long season in the Big East, but that type of slow-me-down game, that's just a one-game aberration in my mind.
Well, I hope so, and it's funny because going into that game, it looks a lot worse than it was because people tended to forget about Pitt's history against Notre Dame, at least because how well Pitt was playing, how poorly Notre Dame was playing in that game. They get blown out by every opponent by double digits. You're right as far as the style of basketball. What does bother me, though, is the fact that they got so frustrated and they didn't make the proper adjustments to do so. They were terrible in transition. They were rushing shots, and then when they had an opportunity to stop Hansbrough to the basket a couple of times, untouched. This is not the Pitt team that we know needing that stop against a guy like Hansbrough in a big spot towards the end of the game. This team's very good, though, and this is going to happen. It's frustrating that it happens at the Pete, and you never want to lose a game like that, but I don't think there's any long-term effects. This team's very, very good.
Well, they get I don't know if it's a break or not, Ray. I mean, they have to go up to the rack and play Rutgers, which is always interesting, although they're a much better team than Rutgers. Then they have Cincinnati. They play Rutgers tonight. They have Cincinnati next Saturday. I mean, are these two teams that, you know, might try to play the Notre Dame style, or this is not really kind of the Rutgers game or Cincinnati's game?
I mean, Mike Rice loves to play defense. I mean, that was his calling card when he was at Robert Morris. He's going to teach defense. You know, Pitt's going to have another tough game scoring, but, I don't think it's in Mike Rice's DNA to try and change his game plan because Mike Bray had, you know, a one-game success against Pitt. I don't think that's going to happen. Mick Cronin's a very good coach over at Cincinnati, too, but I don't know if his team is built for that either. He's got big Yancey Gates inside. He could dump it down low to him. I don't necessarily think Notre Dame had that type of low post player because if they did, they might have gone to him. You know, Notre Dame was about spacing the floor, getting their shooters good shots. You know, pitch and handle these two opponents, and they should be in great shape going into the second half of the Big East schedule.
Oh, yeah, they'll handle them. And you ask if you're worried about Pitt. I'll be worried if they lose to Rutgers. Yes, Mike Rice is turning that program around, but they stink. And I would expect Pitt to come out angry in this situation and to just take care of these two basketball teams handily and put their stamp back on this conference. Those guys aren't happy. Ray's around a lot more than I am, but I can imagine how mad and angry at themselves and disappointed they were after that Notre Dame game. I would not want to be Rutgers.
Yeah, they always respond well to losses under Jamie. You know, very rarely, you know, during his eight-season tenure have they lost back-to-back games. I fully expect them to come out and be in a little bit of a bad mood tonight.
Well, we mentioned that the second half of the season is going to get underway with those two games. And Greg, I'll go with you. Midway point of the season, who's the MVP?
It's tough to say because the scoring's been so balanced, and that's a good thing about this basketball team. You don't have to count on one guy. It's not one person you say this you need him to contribute or you're not going to win. To me, it's Brad Wanamaker. I think he makes that offense go a little bit, cut down on the turnovers. It's hard for me to choose. Part of me wanted to say Nasir Robinson just because I just like the scrappy nature of him and finishing around the basket, even though he looks horrible doing it. These shots are going in, and his effort against Syracuse in the beginning of that game. But I'm going to go with Brad Wanamaker as a first-half MVP.
For me, it's Gilbert Brown. I think Ashton Gibbs and Brad Wanamaker, those are the two stars coming in. I think you knew what you were going to get with them. They're right around the same point-per-game average they were last year. But Gilbert Brown was sort of the unknown factor. Last year he was playing out of position of power forward. This year Jamie moved him back to small forward. And I think the biggest difference in his game this year, he's finally found his shooting stroke. He's just as dangerous from three-point range on a lot of nights as Ashton Gibbs is now. And when you have Ashton being a threat from the outside, Brad being a threat from the wing, he could shoot it from 3-2. He's up around 38-40%. Then when you add your small forward into the mix, Gil's shooting around 42% too from behind the arc. That gives Jamie some great options because, as we all know, they are not a great low-post scoring team. And for them to make a run in the NCAA tournament, they might have to do it on a night when Ashton Gibbs has an off-shooting night. But when you have Gilbert Brown shooting the way he is and Brad Wanamaker playing the way he is, as Greg mentioned, you know, I think they're in great shape because Gilbert has stepped his game up.
Well, let me pivot here, talking about basketball. Pivot on to the Penguins. They've had a good week. They've won a couple times, and they didn't come completely unraveled. They had to protect slim leads both times. Marc-Andre Fleury's continued to look great. You know, when you think about Sidney Crosby now, who's missed a couple weeks with his concussion and is going to miss the All-Star game with the concussion also, and he had that 25-game point streak earlier. Is it Fleury, when you look at the MVP of the Penguins for now that we're at the All-Star break, has it been Fleury? Is he over? He's overcome certainly what was a terrible start To get to the point now where I think he's got to be their best player.
Well, he's right up there. I mean, to me, Chris Letang, too, you can't ignore him. He could be a Norris Trophy winner this year, and it's going to be a great experience for him at this All-Star game. Of course, Fleury's right there in the mix. It was funny after that Islander game the other night, Dan Boswell was asked about Marc-Andre Fleury's struggles, and he said, it's so long ago, I don't even know what you're talking about, which is such a good thing. It looks so bad beginning of this year because it was a carryover from last year, something that you didn't expect. He's been great. He's been right up there with one of the best goaltenders in the league since he came back. You have to put Tim Thomas in that mix, too. You have to make a case. Anytime a goaltender is playing as well as Marc-Andre Fleury is, you have to put a most valuable player of that team, especially when Crosby's out, right next to his name.
I agree. And going back to the beginning of the season, guys, Ray Shiro was lauded because he brought in two defensemen in McCulloch and Paul Martin. That was supposed to shore up the defense. But I don't think Martin's had a great year. I think he's been okay. At this point, it looks like they overpaid for the guy. I think McCulloch is starting to come around a little bit. But, you know, a lot of these games have been on the shoulder of Fleury. And, you know, he shut the door on a lot of occasions, just like that most recent game against the Islanders.
I think it's taken a while for McCulloch and Martin to kind of grasp what they have to do here. McCulloch was hurt for part of that time, so he's maybe a little slower. I'm a little disappointed in the way Martin has played. I think they saw him as a puck mover, a guy that could play pretty solid defense, move the puck a little bit, and I don't think he's gotten much better than he was early in the season. I think you can see McCulloch kind of coming along and getting a little bit better as that goes. But I think Fleury, too, deserves a lot of credit considering how he started. And it was a carryover, Greg, you're right, from last year. And it almost seemed like from the Olympics last year on, he seemed to have even though he didn't play a minute, I don't think, in the Olympics, he just didn't seem to be himself, and he seems to be much more himself now, much more his saves. He's more fluid. He's you know, he's always been all over the place. That's the way he is. You know, this team, when you look at it, the defense is maybe a little better than they were last year. But are they going to find enough offense if Sid and Gino have to miss more time? I mean, are they going to have enough offense to get through what's going to be 8 games in 13 days after the All-Star break?
Well, probably not if they're going to miss an extended period of time. But those guys will come back. I know the concussion thing is a scary thing for Sidney Crosby. He's never dealt with something like that. It's been a while, and it was a mild concussion about a week, and we know how long it's been now. Malkin, the knee scares me a little bit more than a concussion does, except that you can have a recurring situation with that thing with Crosby as well. But if those guys are playing, you'll have enough offense. I'm not worried about that. One guy I'd like to see play in the absence of these two guys a little bit better is Max Talbot. He's got a score. He's been falling off the face of the earth here. You just win these hockey games. You get through it. And let's be honest, does it really matter where they end up seeding-wise going into this postseason as long as they're healthy? You look at the Eastern Conference last year, 7 and 8 seeds made it to the conference final. Mm-hmm. Who cares? Get these guys healthy. They're going to be in the postseason. Just make sure you're playing your best hockey with everybody as close to 100% as possible when it counts.
Well, I think it does matter because if you look at the Eastern Conference standings, if the Penguins lose out to the Flyers, they'll drop down to that 4 spot. And the team that's been occupying that 5th spot for much of the season,
Washington.
Capitals.
Yeah, but that's a bigger deal for the Capitals than the Penguins. You know, Capitals need to prove to me. Yeah, it is, because I mean, when have the Capitals really had any big time playoff win against the Pittsburgh Penguins? That never happens. If I'm a Capitals fan, I'd be scared about that. I don't want to see that. If I'm the Penguins, you need to prove to me you can beat me in the postseason before I'm scared.
That's a tough first round matchup for any team, and it'll be the case for the
Penguins.
Wasn't
for the Canadiens last year.
That's right. The Canadiens did take them out.
Yeah, much better team last year than they are this year.
Well, the Capitals are going to figure out one of these years, and if they play the Penguins in the first round, you know, it could be this year.
Well, the Penguins have a little bit of work to do to get there. But now let's talk about – you talked about Crosby and touched on Malkin. The All-Star game is this weekend, and you're not going to have Malkin. You're not going to have Crosby. Both are out injured. You know, do you have any motivation? Do you have any reason to watch the game without those guys?
No, absolutely not. And when you play, I guess, you know, if you're a Penguin fan, if you're a fan of any team, you watch the All-Star game for your guys. So you've got a guy like Chris Letang you feel great for. Marc-Andre Fleury, what he came back for, you feel great for. But the NHL with the Winter Classic and the big deal they make out of that, it makes the All-Star game even more of a non-issue. I know they tried to jumpstart a little bit with this captain thing, but if you're not a big NHL fan, do you care about who Eric Staal and Nick Lidstrom pick? Is there there any storyline there? No, it's not. If Crosby was playing in this game, maybe had Crosby and Ovechkin as the captains, a little bit of juice there. But to me, Nick Lidstrom and Eric Staal picking teams on Friday night on the NHL Network at 6 o'clock does nothing for me. The game doesn't do much for me either. Just to me, get back to the hockey. Let's get to the stretch run and get this over with. It's nonsense.
I think All-Star games are for kids. I remember watching every All-Star game in every sport when I was a kid, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But, you know, once you grow up, I think everyone just realizes these things are pretty much meaningless, and that's especially the case for the NHL All-Star game. Now that the Winter Classic has become such a vocal point for the league right around the same time as the All-Star game.
Well, I think they blew it with how they do the picks. You know, Staal and Lidstrom, like you said, Greg, that unless you're, like, you're a big fan, do you care?
No.
It's Crosby. It's Ovechkin. It's the superstars of the game who you want to see there. Like, you know, just like on the playground, the best guys pick. That's how it works. I mean, that's how when I was growing up, it's like the best guys pick because they can't be on the same team. You know, so I think that the NHL kind of – it's a good idea to kind of do it, but I think it kind of blew it with how they're doing it. They got to tweak that some, but – you know, I won't be watching because I'm on my way to Dallas, so you will
Me
be
too.
Too. Yeah, there you go.
I'll be here, guys.
But you're not going to watch the game. That's, all right, next up, guys, I read fan mail on Post-Gazette Roundtable here on 93.7 The Fan.
You're listening to the Post-Gazette Roundtable on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. It's time for fan mail on the Post-Gazette Roundtable. Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.
Welcome back to the Post-Gazette Roundtable on 93.7 The Fan, where it's time for our final segment that we call Fan Mail. Reminder, if you'd like me to read your email on the air, please send it to me at jmicco@postgazette.com, and we'll consider it for a future show. Please put the word Roundtable in the subject line. Our fan mail this week comes from Al, who writes, "In the 70s, we had Three River Stadium, Jack Lambert, Mean Joe Green, and, of course, the Steel Curtain, which was the legacy of that era. Fast forward to today, and the Steelers still have an amazingly strong defense. As a suggestion, let's call our iconic defense of today the Steel Shield of Heinz Field. It will become the legacy of Harrison, Polamalu, and, of course, Dick LeBeau as the strategic leader of the Steelers' defense for the last 9 years at Heinz Field. These guys deserve their own identity, the Steel Shield of Heinz Field." You know, it's good to see fans. Al, thanks for the letter. It's good to see fans take a look at this team as different. For years upon years, people here in Pittsburgh have kind of lived in those 70s teams, and everybody was compared to them. The team in 95 that went and lost to the Cowboys in Super Bowl 30, compared. They didn't get it done. The teams in the 70s did. Then the Detroit Super Bowl, Super Bowl 40, with Jerome Bettis going home. That team started to take on its own identity some, and then it won. It won a Super Bowl. So the team in the 70s had somebody to join them, a team in the early 2000s. Then the team that won 2 years ago in Tampa with that stirring victory, the last-minute touchdown pass to Santonio Holmes. And now this year, this team headed to Dallas to play the Packers. You can see now fans looking and saying these are two different eras, two different teams. For too long, I think people in Pittsburgh and Steeler fans have lived on those teams in the 70s. Not anymore. There's no need to do that. Those were great teams. Nobody will ever forget all the Hall of Famers, Bradshaw, Harris, Green, Ham, Lambert, Blunt, Knoll. You can name them all, and there's more. Webster. Those teams were great. Probably the greatest assemblage in a decade of football than any time in the NFL, in the history of the NFL. But now it's different. Now it's a different team. It's Roethlisberger. It's Harrison. It's Polamalu. It's folks like that. It's Hines Ward. It's players like that who will create a new legacy here in Pittsburgh. Want to call it the Shield? The Steel Shield of Heinz Field? Go ahead. Call it whatever you want. But this team, this group, has created its own legacy, and that will continue next Sunday when they face the Packers in Super Bowl 45 in Dallas. That does it for today's Post-Gazette Roundtable. I'd like to thank today's panel, Fan Morning Show host Greg Giannotti and the PG's Ray Fittipaldo. And as always, thanks to our producer, Matt Popchak, for the great job he does every time we do this show. I hope you'll join us on the Roundtable next Saturday morning on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. I'm PG Sports Editor Jerry Micco. Have a great week, everyone.